Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a ton of news because it's been a while since we've been here. Then we're going to have an interview with a store owner about the new Asmo North American FFG distribution model. And we're going to have a tip of the week and then finally some closing comments.
All right, are you ready to embark upon
the journey into the news? There's a ton of news because we've been gone for a long time.
We haven't had an episode since last year.
But it's a new store championship season.
It's a new store championship season. It's a new season of the show. It's basically almost no first edition talk anymore. So hopefully it'll be a little more intelligible. We're actually doing this episode a little bit ahead of when we were planning on airing new episodes again. We haven't quite ironed out some of the things we're going to be changing. But there's just so much news. We wanted to avoid having an episode that was just going to be an hour's worth of news. So we're not reintroducing ourselves. We haven't fixed the intro to work for the next season. We're just... This is like the intermission? I don't know, the warm-up act to ourselves?
Prelude.
Can we be a... Oh, that's a better word. There we go. We're the prelude.
Yeah. So this is your prelude. So welcome to the prelude of Beyond the Wall.
Of Season 3, yes. All right.
All right, so let's talk about some of this news.
Some of this news.
Where do you want to start?
I was thinking since there's really so much of it, I'm going to break it down into three parts, one being just Thrones in general, another being community news, and the third being official FFG news, and we'll tackle that last.
Sure. Does community news include, like, all the new content people are coming out with?
Yeah, the first thing that I wanted to mention, and we haven't really spent a lot of time ever talking about this, but there was an official announcement that Winds of Winter would not be out before Season 6. And I don't know, I feel kind of weird about that.
So, Alex, for our listeners, what is Winds of Winter?
If there are any listeners who... What, really? Some listeners won't have heard of Winds of Winter?
You have new players.
New players that... I don't approve of that kind of listeners. Those kind of listeners, we should just leave them at the
desk. No. There are all kinds of lessons. We like people that just like the show. We like people that just like the game, Alex.
We tolerate people who just like the game.
But what happens if they like the game and the show? Do we tolerate them more?
You pose difficult questions this early in the season. All right, Winds of Winter
is the new book coming out by George R. R. Martin, the next in the series, and it seems like it's going to be delayed longer than the show, which means the show may give us some hints into what's going to be going on in the book, which bothers Alex.
It does. I'm not sure how much. I mean, I'll probably watch the show, and maybe it just messes with my feeling of superiority. I tend to watch the show with some people who haven't read the books. I'm like, oh, I know what's going on. Well, you know, not everyone can be up to my standards. And so I'm watching the show with people who haven't read the books, and I feel superior to them. But now we're all treading basically the same ground. This is not good. I need to feel superior to people.
Maybe you could watch the show like a day before and then pretend you have some kind of knowledge and be like, this is going to happen for sure.
I think you solved my conundrum. There we go. Yeah. That's what we'll do.
That is a pretty big announcement, though. It does mean that they're going to have to take the notes that Martin had written, and they probably, I'm guessing, have early access to the book, you know, whatever state it is, to create the show.
Really, this shouldn't have come as too much of a surprise to us, but it still puts us in a really weird position where something else is caught up to your book and is going beyond anyway.
I'm going to watch the show. I like the show.
Yeah. So community news then.
Okay. So there's been a bunch of new stuff. We've got two new podcasts that have come out.
Two new podcasts. We have Taming Dragons out of Atlantic Canada.
Which is awesome because we love fellow Canadians.
We do. Although people will start confusing Canadian podcasts. Second new podcast is Calling the Banners, which is with people out of the Pacific Northwest, out of Washington State. starting that out. So I think Calling the Banners has had two, possibly three episodes by now. I've only listened to the first. It was quite good. Possibly the best sound quality of any podcast so far. And Tamian, I listened to their first episode as well and look forward to hearing more of out of the Moncton. So, yeah, they said they were going to focus a little bit more on Melee. And then the Joust player is like, yeah, but now all the Joust players will stop listening, and that won't just be the case. But I think they have a different approach to how they're going to do this. They mentioned they're going to do a little more retrospectives on, you know, how have the cards changed the pool rather than the sort of speculation that we like to do, because you don't need to know anything to speculate.
Yeah, you can just make up anything. And then you find out left and right are good. Oh, wait, someone said that, right, Alex?
No.
They're still good. They're good cards right now.
Well, let's not be mistaken on the cast.
Couple more packs, maybe they'll change. Right now, they're good. All right.
All right, what other community things were you going to go into?
There is a couple of YouTube channels that are up. Glazer's got one going, but more importantly, we have a better quality one that just posted its first episode. I can't remember the name for the life.
Songs of Bambi the Bard is what you...
That's it, of course. How could I forget Bambi?
That's right, Bambi the Bard. Yeah, so I think... He's referencing you guys as well, and when you're saying this channel of Glazers, this is the Beyond the White Book that you're involved with, because apparently taking a break from the podcast meant for you, like, filling that time with other podcast-related activities?
Yes, yes. I had way too much time on my hands without the podcast.
You're an addict.
So I had to do something. So I've been taping Glazer and talking with Glazer on shows. But, yeah, it's poor quality. We'll see if we'll get motivated enough to, like, you know, put some intros and fix it up a bit, because it really could use some work.
Maybe change that background, the default octagon background, to something that actually, you know, speaks to your channel name. No? Maybe?
Then we'd have to do that. I'd have to get the proper cards. Like, there's this huge list of things I'd have to do, Alex. We'll see.
After this line of all the time that you have to make shoddy content, what would you do without me, John?
Exactly.
Apparently this.
I like the making of the content. I just don't like the editing and other parts. That's boring.
I mean, this is casting our minds way back, but in community news, if you, for some reason, have not listened to the Banter Behind the Throne episode just before their Christmas special, where with the singing, that was fantastic, and any Thrones player should listen to that. That was...
Well, any 1.0 player. No one else would understand what it means.
Well,
let it be.
Is it worth, like, digging through all the references to find out what it is? But anyway, fantastic. I was also going to mention, despite the fact that we, you know, don't talk about that other website and that other cast, there have been a number of new articles, some of them really quite good, on the White Book podcast. They've been on their website, the White Book site.
Yep.
Because they've got,
been tracking down good players and getting them to write stuff.
Yeah, there have been the articles I've read so far. There have been some by Aaron and Alex Kern, which is sort of a dialogue of deck building. I actually thought I'd hate that format. I've quite liked it. Lauren's been doing the White Harbor Times. Roy's been doing these intro for new players and for community building. I think Andreas Aldrin, I haven't read it yet, but just did an interview. He's doing interviews with European meta founders or central figures, and he did one with Aoria. So I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but it did go up. And Patrick Haynes has been doing some articles as well. So they really have recruited some big guns. And it's, I will say that it is now worth checking out their website with everything that sentence implies. I also do want to say that there have been a number of articles on CardGameDB. I think Alex Frog wrote a really nice one about trying to break a card, trying to break the King Robert's Warhammer and push it to its max. And
I read that one. It was fun.
Yeah, I really like that format, too. I like taking a card and then imagining the best scenario for the card and then working backwards to try and create it. I thought that was a lot of fun.
The Octagon tournament in full swing. There's like 28 people left. If you don't know about these tournaments, Lauren from Boston runs them, the Fitch That Wins. And I understand that she'll be running a second one once this one's done in 2 or 3 months. So if you like Octagon or you want to play online, it's a great way to get a bunch of games in.
Speaking of online stuff, I know that a lot of you already know about the Skype group and have joined it at one point or another. There's a push to make people use this Discord server because of all the problems we've had with Skype, primarily the dreaded vortex where you'll type and nothing will come back for hours until it turns out it's a peer-to-peer system, and certain peers have to be on for the group to work.
I haven't even looked at the Discord, Alex. Have you?
I have, yes. I Still have to get in the habit of opening it regularly because I don't put anything on startup on my computer because I prize its startup time too much. But I've actually quite liked it. I've checked the sound quality on Discord, and it's pretty good. So if you just want to hop into a game. The problem, of course, for me is that I use Skype for so many work contacts as well that I always have it open. So adding something else is a little tricky, but it does look like...
But I don't want to be in two places. That's annoying.
You don't want to be in two places. There are two other community items that I had on my list. The first is the Iron Link database.
Yeah.
Have you seen this yet?
It's kind of a database that takes into account handshake games. When I say handshake game, it's basically a game played between two players, not a tournament or anything, just for fun. Or maybe competitively, but it's just the two people. And
it
lets you report those matches.
Ignorance. In terminology, I always thought handshake was when it was confirmed by both parties in a sort of computer science term. So that a handshake
that
game
is correct.
Was, okay,
yeah.
So wouldn't that be if only both people had submitted?
I am using the term slightly incorrectly from computer systems, you're
okay,
right. And because normally you would want for the data to be accurate, you'd actually want the other person to confirm, right? If there's some way to do that.
Yeah.
But because of it's a sheet and everything, you can't really have that. Because otherwise someone could, in theory, just make up bad data.
Yeah, I don't think
easily.
Anyone...
I mean, two people could do it the other way, right?
Yeah, Well, that's twice as hard, right?
Exactly.
But so this, unlike the Annals, which are still amazing and better and everything, but no, I'm kidding. The Iron Link tackles a different problem. It tackles individual matchups. So it's something that you look at, you submit your data for individual games, and then you look at it and you get to see something like, how does Night's Watch Fealty do against Lannister decks, for instance, or how does, and so you can sort of suss out some information about your deck. It's got advantages and disadvantages. It's much higher resolution than something like the Annals, which just records events, but the data in the Annals is generally more robust because you know that everyone in there is playing a tournament, and a deck that made the cut won 4 or 5 games to get there. So there's actually more data points hidden behind that deck. You just can't.
But on top
get
of that,
resolution.
You're also playing. You're also seeing decks that people are playing like their very best to win. But these other, one-off games, someone might just be playing a new kooky idea, or you don't know what they're doing. They might be the first draft of their tournament deck that needs a lot of polish still.
But I do think that something like the Iron Link database, first of all, I think it has a lot of merit, and I think it can go into a much higher resolution. The bigger that database gets, we'll get some incredible information about it.
Yes.
But I also think it's probably a more accurate reflection of the kind of thing that you're going to see playing on Octagon. The last item that I have is a new announcement that I don't understand all the meat to it yet. This is the Tabletop Tourney Grounds. So what have you heard about this Tabletop Tourney Grounds so far?
It's basically a secondary tournament structure that's going to start just after FFG's official tournaments. It's going to have a tier tournament system where it's going to be broken into, we'll say, regions, and the winners of these champions will play in a champion for the region and then the region to a larger one.
So this is a...
$15 entry. They're going to ship the prizes to the store, and the store is going to send them back some of the money, I guess.
So I don't – this isn't meant as a criticism. I haven't dug into the details yet, and clearly you have done so more. This is basically just like if FFG had a second round of regional, which may
– Except that you have to realize that they're invitational tournaments, so you have to qualify in the first layer to be invited to the next.
Okay.
So it's a little bit different than FFG's tournament structure.
And again, I'm sure all these details have been ironed out. What is the incentive for the stores to participate?
I think in general the stores are keeping a percentage of the prizes that come in, the registration fee.
Okay.
Or something like that. That's my guess. Again, that's a pure guess because I didn't see that detail.
I mean, we'll probably have Chris Kaiser, who's organizing this, who's very excited to be running this. I'm sure we'll be able to get him on the show in the next little while to sort of... So that wraps up my community news segment. All right.
FFG news.
I'll go over the ones that we can go over in like one line or less first so we can get them out of the way.
Okay.
New spoilers, the Calm Over Westeros stuff, they look interesting. There's some neat things you can do with Miriam Mazdur. I don't know if she'll see a lot of play. She's too expensive. Store championship season has started. I've actually attended a store championship. It was
before
awesome.
We leave products, we got another one being shipped, right? There's another product on the boat or being sent out for the 28th?
We do. The reason I didn't quite do that, and we can go into it in a sec, is there seems to be a street date for it. So Road to Winterfell is shipping now, and all the sources, and I can't trace the original information, seem to be implying that all of these FFG products that came to shipping now will all be released on the same day. So I'm sure lots of stores will have it within like 2 or 3 days, but they're going to be forced to hold it until the 28th and have an official street date, which
is awesome.
Is it? I mean, it sounds like it's good for tournaments. Because then it's standardized.
No, it's not just good for tournaments. It's good for shipping. Because here's the thing. They always announce, like, you know, Taking the Black is going to be out on February 28th. And then they're trying to get their shipping and it doesn't work. But now they're announcing February 28th and shipping it like 3 weeks before. So they have like extra leeway to screw up their orders. And I still don't feel ripped off when my Taking the Black doesn't show up in my store for a month.
I think street dates are probably good and across several products to possibly useful. But anyway, so this getting street date has also been accompanied by Wolves of the North being at the printers and King's Peace being on the boat. So it does look like Wolves of the North might be, which is the Stark Deluxe box, might be between chapter packs 3 and 4 rather than 4 and 5, which was the order it was announced. So cool. Stark, if you're not playing it yet, maybe you will be. Or maybe everyone else will be, and all of us hipsters will have to play something else.
Yeah, I can't play what everyone else is playing.
Right. Also, with new product, and this one's possibly more important, reprints of the core are in stores. And they have been for about a week now when I'm recording this. But, the core was basically completely gone. And there's actually a quote from Christian Peterson that says, "New product stock is notoriously difficult to predict. For example, Game of Thrones LCG 2nd Edition core set sold out in the first few weeks, even though we produced twice as much as the most recent LCG."
Well, we are the second most popular LCG based on the Twitter voting thing that FFG just did.
I saw that Twitter voting thing. I don't have Twitter, so I couldn't actually see the poll, and I wasn't going to sign up for it to vote for it.
Yeah, we're second.
Those are all the ones that I think we can get over in what I thought was going to be a line and turned out to be a little more. Things that might take a little longer, or at least a few lines to talk about. New tournament rules. I don't know if you saw the two articles that I wrote on CardGameDB.
Really? You're going to say you don't know if I saw? Alex, I heard your rant before those articles went up.
Oh, that's true. You did.
Right. I watched the thought
cool
process trickle down. Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah,
I did. I read them. They were good. I like the first one more.
You like the one where I was ranty?
It's very rare to see you get frothed up against FFG, but for FFG. So that was a nice experience. Yeah.
For those of you not familiar, FFG announced new tournament rules, tournament structures, for basically all of their games. It's not one size fits all. It's slightly different for games like Star Wars Netrunner, where you play two games each, Conquest and Thrones are very similar. I really didn't like these changes. On average, it meant fewer games played. On average, it meant more people missing the cut on strength of schedule. Won't go into the small details of it. Really, really disliked it. So did James and Drakey, who helped me write those articles. We got a reply from FFG a couple days later by pipes on the CardGameDB boards stating that they've seen the outcry, that it turns out, and this looked a lot like backpedaling, that these only apply to store championships, which I still don't think is good, but at least they were reading it, they were listening, and they won't ruin regionals, or they'll ruin regionals differently. Because I am not happy with those rules. I mean, to put it in context, the tournament that I went to, the store championship that I went to, was 23 players, which is another one of those flex points where more than half of the people who have a single loss will not make the cut on strength of schedule.
Yep.
That was the tournament I attended. It wasn't me picking a number from a list to find the worst possible scenario. At a 23-person tournament, you can have more than half of the people with a loss failing to make the cut. And thankfully, the vote was unanimous at this tournament. We went for 5 rounds of Swiss, which is the correct number. We got a king of Swiss. We went into a top 4 with all of the one losses. It was great. I loved it. It was fantastic because...
Well, I mean, Julian runs a pretty good tournament there in Montreal, so...
He knows his stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a little bit of time to talk about some Netrunner stuff.
Why?
Because I think it matters for Thrones. Not because Netrunner matters at all, of course.
This better be a really important Thrones related thing, or I'm cutting you off.
Ooh, then I better start with the one that's more likely to be Thrones related. Netrunner released champ decks. So basically,
I know, all alt art.
So alt art is not quite the right word because it's just the original art made full art. So using right. their alt art template. So
alt card.
Alt card, mate. Yeah, I don't know exactly, but so basically
something cool.
They took the decks of the champion who won in 2015, so long ago, and they printed versions of those cards of those decks with the same number of cards and everything that had full bleed, sort of like their alt art template versions of the art that's already on the cards. This, I think, is intended to be a nice promotional product to get a whole bunch of different cards. Cards that are staples that some people don't have three of because they're from the core as well. It's a way to get them, to get a different art perspective. It also sounds neat to get an entry point into functional decks. Now that their card pool is very big, it seems kind of neat, although maybe champ decks are not the best entry point. I don't know. People are obviously asking if this is going to happen in Thrones, and my guess is, for a couple of reasons, I think it'll be a fair ways off.
They're going to test the waters with this, right?
Well, I think they're going to test the waters with this. I also think that it makes more sense when the barrier to entry is high. One, I think, might upset you.
No.
I think this might upset you.
All right, let's hear it.
All right, so, and, I mean, this is speculation, but what the hell? We did say that we didn't need any real information to do a podcast. Have you seen, they put up the 2016 regionals announcements, which means the call for regional submissions. So stores are supposed to ask to get a regional in the U.S. or Canada. Yep. And the deadline
for
that.
And regionals are May to end of July or something.
Yeah. So this is the point that I want to center on. There's some weirdly odd information. Great. Weirdly precise information. And when I
in the U.S.
pointed this out to John, we came to a conclusion that was highly upsetting. So the Canadian ones say, oh, it's from May to July, and that's fine. That's consistent with previous years. That runs up to Nationals or to Gen Con, which is generally the last week of July, and last year it was a little bit later.
Well, actually, last year the Canadians ended in June, and we had Canadian Nationals before Gen Con, remember?
No, Canadian Nationals were after Gen Con.
I don't think so.
That four-person tournament? That was after Gen Con.
The year before.
The year before was before, yes.
The year before, it ended. The regionals ended, like, June 15th. And then we had the Nationals just a couple weeks before Gen Con, because Simone flew in and we worked on our Gen Con.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I mention all this to put it in context because the U.S. dates say April 2nd to June 12th. Now, June 12th is a lot earlier than end of July, and it's a weirdly specific date to pick. And the only conclusion that I can draw from this is that they're doing something different with U.S. Nationals. And that could mean anything. And this is – I have not a shred of evidence to back this up except what I just said. But
– you know – there was some complaints last year about tournaments going like right up to the day before Gen Con. So maybe this was their overreaction to solving that problem and nothing's changing.
I think I could see this breaking down in like several ways. Yeah, maybe nothing's changing and they don't want any competitive events in the month and a half before for a tournament that used to be North American Nationals and yet the Canadian ones could still run till July. That doesn't seem to make much sense.
Well, it would make sense if the Canadian Nationals wasn't scheduled for, you know, a month and a half after our regional season.
Okay, but let's put it this
way. Maybe that's the new break point. Maybe they're saying, you know, we're going to say a month and a half, a new chapter pack, so that the environment's a little different between the different pieces, and that's when the Nationals are going to hit.
Yeah, I have a sneaking suspicion that it means that North American Nationals are moved up and will not be at Gen Con. And this is, again, it's pure speculation, and I'm – obviously they'll still have some Thrones at Gen Con regardless. And I could even see this being a great thing where Gen Con becomes like Continentals.
Continental.
Like, so at the same level of Stalic, so they can give Gen Con a card and Stalic a card design and then Worlds – and you don't have any...
Which would sort of one of their big problems, right? Because right now they have all these nationals and some nationals get card designs.
And therefore U.S. nationals would be sometime earlier, who knows where, some rotating location, and wouldn't get a card design.
Maybe at the FFG Center, because that means they would not have to fly their people anywhere.
I was actually looking at this date, and so the 12th, which is the date that those end, the week following the 12th is another major board game convention called Origins. It's speculation. Never mind. We'll ignore that.
You think National goes to Origins?
I don't know. It's a possibility. Who knows? Anyway, all of this is speculation. I would really like it if they did Gen Con as a Continentals. I think that would be great. But I could also see them hiding behind some excuse on how hard it is and how expensive it is to run Nationals at Gen Con and then just, like, move it to somewhere else and Gen
Con. But if they're going to be running a Game of Thrones tournament anyways.
Yeah, but if it's not Nationals, does it really have the same pull?
People are at Gen Con, right? Like, does it have the same pull? I don't know. It's still a huge major Thrones tournament, a big event. When else are you going to get to, in America or... In Canada, when else are you going to get to play 60 plus 70 people?
Oh, it's going to be way more than that if it's going to be a... Anyway.
Okay, way more than that, exactly. When are you going to get to play 200 people?
When I travel to Starlight this year? Maybe? I don't know. I'm still looking at it.
Yep, but that's basically what it is. It's you get to play in these huge, giant tournaments not very often. You have to go to places like Starlight. In Europe, they're more common, though, right? These bigger tournaments. So I think... Gen Con's always going to be a big event. As long as they got the space, they're going to get people. So if it's not Continentals and it's not Nationals and they're just doing Gen Con like a stupid Game of Thrones event, yeah, Alex, you're right. I'm going to be really pissed off. And I might be so pissed off, I'll lose my mind. I've already bought my tickets, my hotels, and a whole bunch of other people have. I know some people have gotten flights from Europe and stuff. And I know at least two other people who have gotten hotels that can't be refunded. And with the great value of the Canadian dollar right now... It's an investment.
Yeah. Let's not remind me just how shitty Canadian peso is doing right now. All right. So.
One second. Okay. We can't leave this now. FFG. If you listen, which I know you don't, but if you do.
At least one of them does.
For the love of God. Okay. For the love of God. Don't screw us on Gen Con this year. Give us Nationals or Continentals. Make it a big event. If you want to change it, that's fine, but give us like a year's notice. Announce at this Gen Con or at your next Worlds so that you're going to be changing your organized play and changing where these tournaments are going to be held. Don't change it after people have booked. And we had to. Like, the hotels for Gen Con are going up in, 6 days, I think? People are going to be able to access the housing. And a lot of people bought hotels before that because they know after housing is the rush. And... we want to stay in the same place, so just FFG, don't screw us over.
Fair enough. So, as I was saying, practically real time, although it won't be real time for you guys, you won't know the difference because we're awesome at editing. The last thing that I wanted to talk about is that we have this weird, or at least weird to us as gamers, restructuring of Asmodee North America taking over FFG, a new distribution model, Asmodee taking over rights to English language Catan, some press releases with absolutely idiotic use of language, and the word whom there where it should be who, just to upset me, so they've been taking tips from Darknaj. And
to whom it may concern.
That's fine. But so we don't really know how this works. So in order to find out how it works, let's bring on a guest.
Sure.
As we just alluded to on the cast, we don't know what to make of these, but we're trying to hunt down people who do. And one of those people is Patrick Day, who is joining us from Washington State. He's one of the owners of Uncle's Games that we've heard referred to a couple times by Metamates from the Pacific Northwest. He's also a district manager for the Western stores, which means you're in charge of 3 stores and you own many, and you know something about the gaming industry.
Yeah, a little bit. The funny thing about the gaming industry is, unlike a lot of industries, it's mostly all small businesses, so all of those little retailers have a lot of differing opinions, so I want to be careful. And anything I say, I guarantee you could find, 30 other store owners that will probably disagree with what I say, so there you go.
But you also run a pretty big gaming event, or help run it, right?
Yes, yes. There is a kind of a pseudo convention we got started last year called Evergreen Tabletop Expo. I've hosted regionals every year that they've existed. At some point, regionals was getting so big that it wasn't really fitting in our store space super well. I mean, it was fitting, but it just wasn't comfortable, if you know what I mean. So
can't have just been Thrones. I mean, we obviously think Thrones is the best and the biggest and the brightest, but our regionals in first edition weren't clogging up your stores, were they?
No, no, no. I mean, actually, we had a lot of people coming down from British Columbia, so regionals for Thrones was bigger than normal events, I would say, that we've hosted for Thrones, so at least before second edition. But it was definitely Netrunner and X-Wing that were really pushing the seams, if you will, of store space. So anyways, there's this other collectible card game called Magic, and they have these big events where they rent out convention centers, you know, Grand Prix and that sort of thing. So I suggested to Fantasy Flight, hey, I would love to host something like that for regionals. Can we make something like that happen? And that grew from there into ETX. Seattle's kind of a hotbed for the industry. There's a lot of publishers, a lot of game designers who all live out here, and they all kind of wanted to be involved. And so it was really just intended to host regionals, and it grew up into something much bigger by the actual launch last year.
All right. So the main reason we have you on, and you've actually been extremely helpful because I've been making some Facebook posts about this, and you have actually forwarded some articles to me about the gaming industry and how it handles some of these things and what some of this Asmodee North America mumbo-jumbo might actually mean. But maybe let's start off with how are things – before we even talk about this announcement and any of the merger, what do some of those terms that they're talking about, things like distribution, how are those handled already?
Yeah. Sure. So like we talked about, because a lot of this industry from a retail standpoint is run by locally owned small business stores – you have what's called a three-tier distribution model. And what that means is that you have your publishers, your big guys like Fantasy Flight, like Wizards of the Coast, and even your smaller publishers, you know, like your Calliope Games or whoever. And they are the ones who manufacture – well, they're the ones that publish the games. You know, they manufacture through factories or whatever. But rather than stores buying directly from them, that could be problematic because – most stores don't need like 30 copies of Thrones, you know, on their shelf. Some stores do, but most stores do not. And especially if you think about some of the slower moving titles, you really only need 1 to 2 copies of, you know, Twilight Imperium on your shelf as a retailer.
And it still takes up a ton of space.
And it still takes up a ton of space, absolutely. So what you have is this middleman that's the distributors. And so the distributors are basically warehouses that purchase the product from the publishers, and they're the ones who kind of take those case packs and then break them up into smaller pieces and then sell them to the gaming stores. And they take, obviously, a cut off the top.
So does this mean that you as a store have to handle multiple distributors, or does it mean that because distributors reach out to so many publishers, you typically have one or maybe
two? Yeah, I've never owned a comic book store, but I hear that they only have one distributor. But as far as our industry goes, for the board gaming industry, there are many, many, many distributors. I think in the U.S. there's probably about 20 or so, I believe. I mean, that doesn't even include probably some of the smaller guys who just deal in, say, Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh! I can think of that, like, literally just focus on some of the CCG product.
And so I don't know if you can give us any internal details whatsoever into your company, and we don't want to pry, but could you give us a rough number of the number of distributors you generally have to deal with?
Yeah, I mean, we deal with – one of the things that's unique about Uncles is we deal with all distributors. We because we have 5 stores, we're able to do some things that a single store operation might struggle in doing. But regularly, there are 3 main distributors, at least on the kind of hobby side of the game that we deal with. We also deal with a lot of like family, Jigsaw, that kind of stuff. And so obviously we're getting that through a completely different distribution model.
So then why should this system change? What do people dislike and like about this existing distribution model? And maybe how does it handle the internet?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, first of all, distributors all have their own, you know, they set up a contract with you as a game store. And so there's no rhyme or reason necessarily from distributor to distributor. Your terms can be different. So, from an internet standpoint, what that means is that game stores, online sellers, everybody's kind of working on the same model, basically. So if I, you know, have a little warehouse or even a storage unit or something, and I'm buying games to sell online, and I'm a staff of one, I get the same pricing as, say, a local gaming store that has a staff of several people, is hosting events, et cetera, et cetera. And so that can obviously be problematic. A lot of retailers have been grumpy and exceedingly growing in their grumpiness, I guess you could say, over the last few years, because they, you know, are selling X-Wing or whatever, for selling a chapter pack for $15, right? But then they see that exact same chapter pack being sold online for $8. And so it creates a sense from the retailer's standpoint, from a brick and mortar standpoint, that things aren't quite fair. Obviously, you could argue the other way, that, you know, let the market decide. But if you still believe in having, you know, a brick and mortar local gaming store in your local neighborhood, the future wasn't necessarily looking bright if everything was just being sold online at near cost, if that makes sense.
So this is because of basically reduced overheads for these online sellers.
Absolutely. There are actually some people who just want to be able to get access to the product for personal use, and will actually sell like really close to cost, because they're not even really running a business as much as they're just getting product for themselves, maybe for their friends, that kind of thing.
Out of their basement kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Generally, if publishers or distributors find that out, it can be a real problem. But again, like I said, everything's so fragmented that can be really hard to even discover for a distributor or publisher.
Now, this, to mention the elephant in the room, doesn't seem to be a major issue for Magic. You don't have these huge difference in sales prices. You still have people going into the stores and buying. Where does that difference come from?
Now, WotC, Wizards of the Coast, you'll hear me call them WotC a lot. That's kind of the slang for Wizards of the Coast.
I thought it was WOTC. I'm WotC makes more sense. It's fewer syllables. I've been saying WOTC for ages.
You know, it's probably even, you know, by region. So anyways, Wizards of the Coast, they've actually had several different systems in place they've tried. At one point, for example, I believe you couldn't sell product online unless you had a brick and mortar store. So then you had all these guys who were literally like creating pseudo brick and mortar stores just to qualify to be able to sell product online and stuff like that. So what they really found, I think, and I don't work for WotC, I don't have like insider information or anything on them, but is that by enforcing through their organized play, through what's called WPN, they could basically say, hey, if you start breaking some conditions we're going to set on you, then we won't let you host official Wizards of the Coast events. And oh, by the way, official Wizards of the Coast events are going to come with all this really cool, these cool promos, special promotions, pre-releases, so you can, you know, have these big events before the product is even technically released. And so, as you can imagine, pretty much every game store nationwide falls into line, right? And is like, okay, I definitely don't want to miss out on all these opportunities, so that's why I'm going to sell, you know, around MSRP. So,
but I mean, I assume things like pre-release tournaments and things like that, you can't get access to that product online except through people who have bought it at a brick and mortar and then are reselling it.
That's exactly right. Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right.
Draft is super popular too, right? And then you basically have to buy the packs in store normally.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I think bringing in packs would probably be frowned upon.
In a lot of ways, organized play helps enforce these policies, because Magic is really I think that where FFG is trying to go in some ways with organized play is a Magic direction, because it is so store-focused, which is great, because it means you're constantly building more and more players.
So now that we maybe have a slight grasp, a tentative grasp, I'll say, on how the current model works.
I'm still figuring it out. So
good, that's reassuring. So FFG is talking a lot about changing both online sale and distribution of their product by going to this Asmodee North America. I mean, they've already partnered with Asmodee, but now it's that for distribution. They're cutting down the number of distributors down to 5 from I don't know how many they had. A number that was greater than 5, presumably.
So maybe we should back up and explain exactly what happened there.
Okay.
Right? Like the whole joint merger craziness.
Maybe we should back up and you should explain what happened there because
that doesn't sound like a good idea. Yeah.
So Asmodee is obviously a publisher out of France, but they had a pretty strong North American arm. So anyways, they had a North American presence just for Asmodee Games, who makes like Seven Wonders and so many other titles, right? So they have picked up a few years ago, maybe a year ago, year and a half ago, Days of Wonder, which of course makes Ticket to Ride and Small World and all those guys. And then there was kind of this interesting, not necessarily purchasing, but merger, if you will, of FFG, of Fantasy Flight. And then they also picked up a really popular casual game that you guys may or may not be on your radar called Spot It, which, I mean, just sells like hotcakes to family customers. And then the big announcement, of course, recently was that they picked up Catan. So Catan was owned by the publisher Mayfair. And they basically Catan separated from Mayfair, if you will, joined Asmodee as this new sub-company called just Catan. And then also Queen Games that makes Alhambra and a bunch of other stuff.
There's a lot of Spiel des Jahres here in this list.
Yeah, there's a lot of Spiel we're listing here. Queen Games also basically signed on for all of their North American distribution to be done through Asmodee. So what you really have is Asmodee becoming almost like the Electronic Arts, if you will, of the board game industry over the course of
a dangerous analogy.
Yeah.
Electronic Arts does not have the greatest reputation.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, hopefully they're able to wield this power well, right? But it is one of the – I mean, we've seen this with companies like Hasbro, but Hasbro, with the exception of WotC, is really focused on the family mass market gaming, right? I don't know that we've ever seen something to this scale on the hobby side of the market. And I think it speaks to the maturation of the market, honestly. I think it shows that – board gaming is blowing up, and whenever an industry blows up like that, you're going to start to see this kind of thing happen.
Now, when you list all those games, it basically occurs to me that as far as I can tell, a store can't afford not to sell them, and as far as I can tell, a distributor probably can't afford not to carry them. And so isn't consolidating down to 5 distributors putting the rest out of business?
I'm not running those distributors. Now, to be fair, Catan and Queen were exclusive through one distributor, right? And Days of Wonder, actually. So those other 4 distributors have to be really happy because they're picking up huge titles, especially Catan. Catan, I mean, during the holidays, is you just can't even fathom. Yeah, every year we're like, surely everybody now owns a copy of Catan, right? And it just isn't true. It just is not true. So,
well, eventually it will be true at this rate.
Yes.
Eventually.
So certainly that changes things for the distributors. And I guess so what is the goal of – or I mean, you can't really speak to that because you're not FFG. But
yeah.
How does it affect – how does it help you? Help with that? Because, I'm assuming before – the people selling online, we're taking a share of your market.
Well, it helps me in that – well, it helps me in a variety of ways. Number one, three of those publishers are now open to 4 other distributors. So as far as like, negotiating terms or whatever, it may help me. But it at least gives me 4 other sources, right? If Ticket to Ride is out at one place, I can look at 4 other distributors and still pick up Ticket to Ride, which can help with stock levels for the store.
And so what kind of – given that the distributors are trying to find a way to phrase this that doesn't paint FFG to be an evil emperor of some kind, given that these distributors are carrying these products and probably mostly these products and not much else, how much leverage does FFG have over these distributors?
A lot. And so that's the real change. The real change is actually who has the power. I think before distributors have a lot more power in the industry, distributors have a lot of power because if you are a startup, if you're starting a publishing company, if distributors don't carry your game, that game is never going to hit anything but local game, like stores in your neighborhood, right? Like you can go into your neighborhood and they might pick up your game. But if you want to have your games on shelves nationwide or even internationally, if distributors aren't going to stock your game, then you're out of luck. So distributors hold a lot of power with game companies, because the thing is, this isn't the video game industry. Most board game companies, that's what I love about the industry, is it's really just usually a publisher could be as many as like four or five people. Even some of the bigger ones you can think of are really only small companies, which is awesome because it means that you really get to know everybody in the industry.
Like Red Hat or Flathead Games. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And part of that is that, unfortunately, the margins and just the mass market appeal isn't nearly as big as, say, video games or videos or whatever. So,
you have to print something. You can't do purely
that's
distribution.
A big part of it.
Has to take up space and has to be shipped. And you know,
when I make a video game, I can just print a zillion discs, and when I need more, I print a zillion more discs. I know that. A lot of customers get really frustrated with FFG for being like, oh man, I want to buy this and it won't be in stock for 2 months. But the truth of the matter is, it takes a while to print physical parts and compile all those different parts, especially when you're dealing with like plastics and cards. And I mean, it's a big operation. Whereas if I, you know, run out of Fallout 4, I just print out a million more discs and all the game stores have more copies of Fallout 4. So.
Or just tell them to go download it from your server, right?
Or you have them download it from Steam. Absolutely, yeah. So,
if we're shifting away from distributors having that much power over the publishers and the stores to some extent, although I don't know if they exist.
Well, we're shifting away from it with one particular company, right? But by joining up, by all these companies kind of joining up into the Justice League, if you will, of board game companies. They certainly now have power, and so they definitely now can dictate more terms. And I don't know, I didn't, you know, see contracts, but I would imagine, especially for those distributors who are like picking up lines that they were never able to carry before, how would you not sign on that dotted line? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just how do you?
I get to carry Catan now. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it doesn't matter what the margins are.
So that also is kind of comes down to the store level. So a big change that's coming out of this. Now, stores generally always sign some sort of agreement with publishers and that kind of thing, but not to the scale of the agreements that every local gaming store is going to have to sign with Asmodee. And those agreements include things like what we're really talking about, the biggest change being that brick-and-mortar stores will not be allowed in any capacity to sell their product online, period, which is huge because there's a lot of brick-and-mortar stores out there who make at least a portion of their dollars selling online. And so I don't envy their position at this particular moment, to be honest with you.
Yeah, that would cripple one of our local guys who have like a very small storefront and do a lot of their business online.
Well, to be fair, this isn't supposed to affect Canada yet. Changes are not happening in Canada yet.
Yeah, and that'll be interesting actually, because that means you're going to have two different models kind of running side by side. So it'll be interesting to see if one thrives.
So do those stores? I mean, this is the one thing that I've heard come out of this regularly, which is, you know, these, what do they get described as, mom-and-pop stores that are just barely keeping afloat thanks to online sales, and being choked out of that is the end of them. Is that a real possibility? Does that exist?
You know, it may be a possibility. I don't know. It's a good question. Let me put it this way. As somebody who's always trying to think about the future of my company and trying to think of how we can grow as a company, I would not blame anybody with that kind of mindset for, you know, going into online. And Uncles used to do online sales, but we found that more and more people were really just jumping on Amazon, and then whatever would be the lowest price item, that's the item they would generally just pick up, whoever it was that was selling it, right? And since we were never that lowest price item, We found that online wasn't really working for us, so we eventually cut it. But I would not blame any store owner for trying to think to the future and really focusing on that part, that aspect of their company. And so there definitely are going to be some stores that are struggling because of this. But I also think that at least in this area, the vast majority of the stores in this local area, if they do online, it's a much smaller percentage of their business and their focus is really on their storefront. And the other thing that I think, here's what I love about this industry, is that I believe, and you know, you can call me on this later, 10 years from now you can call me on this, but I believe that local gaming stores are one of the few retailers that are future-proof. And the reason that is no matter how big internet sales go, we are the place where people are going to connect to play their games. And so there's kind of a shift, I feel like, in stores where we're becoming not just a retailer, but also an event space. And so more so than we ever were in the past, right? And so I really think that has a lot to do with the future direction. And so maybe that's just – it just means that the gaming stores at large have to start to catch up to that paradigm, I guess you could say.
I think you're right. Like one of the best stores around here has a big play space, but they also have private rooms you can rent. So you can say, I want to rent this room for $20 for a night, this other one that's larger for $40, and et cetera. So, you know, they have some people that rent it every week for their – D&D or small tournaments or whatever it is, you know, they don't have a place where they can get their 10 friends together to play these board games. And they it's not that they don't want to play with everyone else, but because it's a role-playing game or something that might be a little bit more interactive, they don't want to have distractions. So they have these little segregated areas. And it's a very cool idea, and they're always rented. Like,
So, one of my stores actually works with the mall, and outside of the store is an area called the Game Lane. And that area is owned by the mall, and yet it's where all of our big events are run. So you have this mall where the mall traffic is walking through, but they're seeing all this gaming going on at these tables. And that area is actually right next to the food court as well. So as you can imagine, the players love that. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of this cool event space that also – what's cool about that is it's promoting – I know FFG loves this. Like if X-Wing is going on out there, you literally have all these people who are just walking by in the mall going, what are they playing? What is that? You know,
that's Star Wars.
That's a Star Wars game. And so, yeah, I really think that events are a bigger part of the future. That said, you know, we have to still make money from a retail standpoint. I don't know – I haven't quite seen the model that works well where you can be pure event space yet. I've seen the restaurant model, which also, you know, works pretty well.
Now, you mentioned, and FFG has mentioned, that this seems to be an effort to promote that sort of event space model, to say they want the stores that are giving that event space to benefit, and rather than the ones that can sell the product at the cheapest amount.
Absolutely.
I've heard interviews with FFG where they describe the, you know, the friendly local gaming store that isn't friendly or really much of a gaming place, and, you know, that's grime
so
and dirty
sad.
In the basement.
It's so sad. I mean, I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't think anybody starts a gaming store for the money. So it's really sad to me. People who start these stores have to be passionate about the hobby.
One point.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's a shame that I hear those experiences.
So how does this promote them? I expect there'll still be online sales. I mean, I expect to still find online sales on
the
FFG's site, at least.
In the agreement, they basically mentioned two buckets. One bucket is you're a brick-and-mortar store, and the other bucket, I think I have the agreement up.
I think it's
says something like
or something. No, that's
special online retailer or something like that. You have some super special name. But it's pretty clear in the agreement that the people who can sell online, first of all, will not be allowed to sell brick-and-mortar style. And second of all, that those are going to be severely limited. I don't know what that number is. I can't even wager to take a guess maybe at that number, but it doesn't sound like very many. It does not sound like very many at all.
So, again, this isn't something you can necessarily speculate on at all because, you know, that's not information in your hands. But I can't imagine FFG not selling their own product online. like on their own site.
I would imagine that would continue. Anything from a FFG official standpoint, I imagine continues or maybe even rolls into something bigger with Asmodee, right? So,
but you think that stores, I mean, I'm going to spit out names that people tend to recognize, Cool Stuff Inc. or Miniature Market or things like that. They're the ones that are a little bit more in question.
If I was those guys right now, I would be on the phone with everybody I know at Asmodee and making the case, right, that I should be one of these online retailers.
Right, and so what happens if they are and they continue to sell it at, you know, 70% of MSRP or you know, then did the brick and mortar stores benefit at all?
Yeah, so my understanding is that they're going to be signing a different agreement with a higher cost. Substantially higher. I don't know what that number is again, but substantially higher.
From the distributor or directly from FFG?
I think it's direct from FFG. I don't even know that they go through distributors, the online sellers, which also indicates to why it would be a limited number.
Since FFG makes more money.
Oh, well, yeah. Hey, John. Smart guy over there. Yes, exactly. But also, while they would potentially still be able to discount, you know, they won't be able to discount nearly as harshly. I don't know if I've seen really bad discounting on chapter packs or Game of Thrones, but I've definitely seen it on X-Wing product.
Yeah. And it's sort of like an alert that goes out to all the X-Wing players where they're like, you can find it on Amazon at 40%
MSRP
and everybody buys it there. And that certainly makes a big difference, I'm sure, to the brick and mortars that just cannot.
Yeah.
It sounds like there are going to be winners, that there are distributors who are definitely winning from this. And that that FFG gets more control, or that Asmodee North America gets more control and is therefore winning there. And it sounds like there are stores that weren't heavily relying on online sales that have the potential to win. In that people in their area that might have been buying online won't find the same discounts and might come to the
store. I think that's more stores than not. Like, I don't know. It would be interesting to take a poll or something, but I think more stores than not, because of what I was talking about with how Amazon searching goes and everything, most of their business is reliant on what's going on in their storefront, not online.
It's a couple of big sellers, right? Like Starlight Citadel for Canada, for Amazon, and those types of things that are going to be hit really hard where they don't have a storefront.
Right. So,
and FFG makes more money. They're the big winner, too. Don't forget that, Alex.
They are the big winner.
They're the big winner if it works. I mean, if people stop buying online because the product is considered overpriced at suggested retail prices, then they're in trouble.
So, absolutely. And when this got announced, like I said, there's a lot of publishers and designers and stuff in the local area, and I immediately got a bunch of Facebook messages of just being like, what do you think about this, and is this going to work? And just there's a lot of speculation from their end. A lot of them actually assumed that I'd be really angry and upset about it, but thus far everything they have done has seemed to benefit me, so I don't have a lot to be upset about yet.
You'd be really mad about the benefits.
But, you know, it's a little scary to, I don't know, see that much power kind of consolidated. There could be a time in the future where FFG just decides, or Asmodee NA just decides to do something, and I won't be able to say anything otherwise, right? Because I got to have Catan, and I got to have their stuff.
They have you by the short ones, yeah.
And they do.
I guess we've talked a lot about how this might affect stores, which will affect gamers directly, but what do we expect to see as Thrones players? Like, does the packaging change where we see ANA instead of FFG?
So I have speculation here, and well, here's the thing. What I have seen said is that publishers' labels are not changing at all. But what I do imagine you'll see going forward is if they are making a new game, you might see that game, whereas in the past, even if it didn't seem like it was in FFG's wheelhouse, like, I don't know, is it?
Hey, That's My Fish or whatever.
Is a like a family kids game with penguins in it? I bet you didn't know FFG makes that game, right?
No, I did not.
I own that game.
There you go. There you go. So I could imagine that being under a different publisher's name in the future, right? Because it fits more into that publisher's kind of brand.
Yeah, it's not using existing IP like Star Wars.
That's right.
Associate with FFG.
So I think you will see some of that. I would imagine that like if a game feels more Days of Wonder-ish, you might see the Days of Wonder brand on it. And if it feels more FFG-ish, you'll see the FFG brand on it. But really, everybody is still operating in many ways independently. So chapter packs are still going to say FFG on them. They may say FFG and Asmodee NA on the back. I have no idea. But they'll definitely stay FFG. And then another big change, I think, at least I have more reason to believe than not that street dates are coming for all FFG product. And that is the biggest change I could foresee for players. Because one of the things we kind of talked about is if you have, let's say you have two stores down the street from each other, right? And one store gets their chapter packs from one distributor, and another store gets their chapter packs from a different distributor. And the first distributor gets their chapter packs in 3 days earlier than the other store or the other distributor, and they send it out to that store. Suddenly one store, and I bet you've been here. I bet you've walked into one store and been like, wow, this chapter pack isn't at that store, and it's not at this other store.
Yep.
I bet more than a few times you thought, oh, man, that other store is really on the ball, and this store does not know what they're doing. And yet, 2 months later, you know, another chapter pack comes in, and the other distributor gets it a few days earlier than the first one, right? And so it's kind of chaotic. So a big change that I'm excited about is the possibility of street dating, where product comes in the distributor, it's sent to the stores, and they're told, hey, can't sell it before this date, and if you do, you're going to lose your Asmodee license.
Yeah,
no more Catan for you. Exactly. which I think has so much potential. I know that a lot of people have been asking FFG to do this for a long, long time. And I know that FFG's kind of point of view on it is, well, we understand the benefits, but we don't want to hire like 12 employees who do nothing but police the system to make sure nobody's breaking street date. It takes a lot of work to kind of police that, and that much more if you have all those distribution channels we were just talking about. So with street dating, I just think that's going to be a big thing for players because it means that I can plan an event and know, hey, on this day, I'm going to have the new chapter pack. Let's have a release party. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just something I couldn't do in the past. And I've tried to do it, honestly, and run into trouble. I've tried to do it with the second edition release.
Yeah.
and you know how much that got delayed suddenly. And so then that whole kind of party that we were going to host fell through. So I'm really excited about that. Like it just opens up. It doesn't make sense that, in my opinion, we're not doing this more in the board game industry. When you see, like, you know, midnight releases for video games where people are lined up around the store, or, you know, movies always come out on the same day, or comic books always come out on the same day. And so it creates this sense where I can walk in on a day and get the thing that I expect to be able to get. So,
well, I think it helps with the image. I think you're right. And we talked a little bit about this in our intro because there does seem to be this rumor that the next chapter pack will be on the 28th alongside the next Conquest pack, alongside the next Netrunner one, and that this is somewhat being standardized. But I hadn't even thought that could means you can plan a new chapter pack tournament the day after that or whatever.
Absolutely.
Like that's actually really cool.
yeah. Tell your local gaming stores, man, to get on the ball. There's no reason why Thrones shouldn't have release parties, especially for like when we have the big boxes coming in, right?
Stark
like
box.
Stark box. We should definitely be having release parties for
that. Yeah, that would be a good party. A lot of new cards all at once.
Well, I want to give you one last chance to give us a little bit more information about ETX.
Sure.
Because that sounds like it's a big part of your life right now. I know you made some posts on the second edition Facebook group as well, saying that
Store Championships... Yeah, angering a bunch of people. I tell everybody in California I'm so sorry, and I didn't mean anything by it.
They're flying down now.
I didn't mean anything. So, yeah, it's May 27th, 28th, 29th, so it's 3 days. Last year it was 2 days. And it's, in theory, I think I can say that much, hosting each of the regionals for Fantasy Flight Games in one place over one weekend. And there's a lot more going on, too. I know that we have, Catan States is going to be there. And I know that we're having some amazing podcasters and streamers. I think the plan right now is actually to set up a little coliseum, if you will, in the center of the convention center with live streams going on, and people can go literally go up into the seating and watch the feature matches that are going on inside the coliseum. So it's going to be an event. My hope, if we do it well, then we'll put Worlds to shame. No offense to Worlds, I love everybody at FFG, but I want to do an event that is just so epic and big that it's just something that feels like the thing that I feel like FFG players deserve, if that makes sense. I want it to feel...
So when I was going to call it a mini Worlds, I was really going to offend you, wasn't I? All right. So
No. if people call it a mini Worlds, that's a huge compliment. But the thing is, we can put on this huge epic event and build a coliseum and have all these X-Wing tables out and et cetera. But if nobody shows up, then it's not so great. So the way you guys can help me is just letting people know that it's going on. And
so where is it located for those that wouldn't know that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's in Seattle. Well, it's actually in the city just south of Seattle, Tacoma. It's the same SeaTac, same airport. So, yeah, it's up here in the Pacific Northwest. And that's one of the really cool things about ETX is because there are so many publishers and designers here, they will be there. And you will. I have some big plans for that. We're working on actually, rather than having the generic panels that most conventions have, we're actually going to have a school for game designers. So if you're like, man, I want to be a game designer one day, or I have an idea for a game, which any retailer will tell you, that guy walks into your store every day. This is going to be a school taught by some of the biggest names you can think of, you know, like Mike Elliott and Paul Peterson and Mike Salinker. And, you know, this is how you do it. This is how you design, get started, I would say, with a board game design. So that's going to be really cool, too. I'm excited about that. That's new this year. So,
Alex, it's only 44 hours for you to drive. Will you pick me up on the way?
If I'm in Alberta, I'll go. If I'm there for family, which I may well be, I will go. But I'm not picking you up on the way.
If you guys come out, I will take care of you. If you guys can get here, I will
Getting there is the trouble.
It is the trouble. But
especially
if you
with the
here,
Canadian peso down at...
I will take care of your food and other expenses. You get here, and I'll take care of the rest.
It is tempting.
All right.
And
we have this big melee thing going on. It's not just Joust, so...
I like both. That means I have a chance to win something.
There you go.
He's good at melee.
Yeah, actually, I said I was such a bad player, but actually, I'm quite good at melee, so maybe I'm just playing the wrong... I have won or come close to winning in every melee game I've ever played. I think it's because I get to use my mouth more. So... I love the politics.
Okay, well, thank you. Thanks again, Patrick.
All right, thanks, guys. Hey, this was fun.
And so if we're really lucky, we'll get to see you at the bigger mini worlds, the larger it's like a miniature giant space hamster.
Yeah, I don't want to make anybody FFG mad at me. So Worlds is awesome. I just want to do a big thing. So
here's your tip of the week. Keeping an eye on your opponent's gold and remembering which events or what characters they can ambush in with that gold is highly important. I've been playing a lot against Lannister, and this is even more important there because they have things like Tywin and Tyrion where they generate extra gold, sometimes during the Fallon phase, but just extra gold in general. And you have to really pay attention to what they could pop in, especially that annoying Hound. So, you know, making that extra entry challenge against your opponent might not be worth it if they're going to be able to block their follow-up challenges of power or military with the Hound. Keep that in mind. Always watch your opponent's gold.
I would say, I mean, that's a good point. In Thrones, we don't have that much hidden knowledge. I mean, you don't know what's in their hand, but most of it won't come out of their hand until marshaling. There are, right now, somewhere between 2 and 3 events of faction. You should know what could happen.
Yeah. You should be able to say, they're going to do things I do for love. They're going to use cries, as I call it. They're going to use put to the sword. You know the cost of those. Pay attention.
Okay, cries, for the rest of you, is Dracarys, a combination of what Darknotch does when he gets hit by it and his dyslexia. It's actually really good.
And there it is.
Closing comments, John. That's our prelude. It's not actually our first episode, which means that next week may not be a regular episode either. We're still getting some things underway to get season 3 started properly.
We gotta fix our opening. We gotta find a new place to host, probably.
Yeah, we're looking into some of those details that'll make this next season a little bit smoother. And for us on the, you know, editing end and things like that, to make things a little more manageable. We have some things underway. So this was a perfectly full, self-contained episode, but we're not in the full swing of things yet. We're keeping you all on the hook. No, there's an expression for that. Drip feeding things. There's definitely an English expression.
Drip feeding? Yeah, no.
I don't know.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.